Welcome back, everyone. We're here again with Ann Risto and Pam Sudden from the Student Support and Academic Achievement Unit of the Florida's Problem Solving and Response Intervention Project. This session is number 6 of the Focus on the One Desired Result, which is a series of a multi-session experience to support Florida educators in not only utilizing but sustaining a multi-tiered system support with fidelity in every district, school, in classroom. And we have a very special guest today. We're welcoming Dr. George Batch, and he has been a leader in supporting students at multiple levels across the United States, and specifically a lot of the work that he's done is in Florida as well, and he's here to discuss the implications for anticipated barriers regarding designing of lessons and also standards within a multiple-tiered model of instruction. Thank you, George, first off, for your passion and advocating for students who need support as well as joining us today.
My pleasure, Joe. Thank you.
So let me just jump in. So where do we start? Let's just jump in by eliminating some misconceptions of roles of tiered instruction within an MTSS. In your experience, what are some common misunderstandings of tiered instruction you've come across, and how do you eliminate these misconceptions?
Well, I was really glad to see that question, Pam, because when we talk about things like myths or misconceptions, it sounds simple, but it's not. Because myths and misconceptions form beliefs that people have about something that they're trying to do or not do. And sometimes those beliefs or misconceptions are your biggest barriers to implementation of MTSS. So in my work in doing this, there's a few things. Number one, that MTSS is a framework. It is not another thing, it is the thing. And so in my work, and I'm working with a number of school districts now, from small to large, the first thing we do is to work with the superintendent and the school board to get a policy passed that basically says MTSS is the way of schooling for the district. Policies sustain, people come and go. So this is a framework. It is not a program. It's where you put all of your services, academic, behavior, social, emotional, all the services a school district provides into that framework. And it becomes that framework that increases effectiveness and efficiency. So that's the first issue. The second issue is this is not a referral, this is not a replacement for pre-referral interventions, right? It's like, oh, we've always been doing this, you know? If a kid's not doing well, we maybe ask the title teacher to work with them, and then we maybe do somebody else, and then when nothing works, we refer them for special ed. Special ed is integrated in all the tiers. It's not a tier. The other issue that I think is important is that the tiers don't exist. They're simply an analogy or a metaphor. The tiers simply represent the intensification of instruction. Tier one is the least intense, tier three is the most intense. And we have to get rid of this idea that a kid goes from tier one to tier two to tier three. I work with many teachers who can provide tier three intensity in the general ed classroom. So thinking about this as intensification of instruction, and the best way that I can the quickest way to convey what I'm meaning is to say tier one is what everybody in a school does to support everybody. Tier two is what everybody does in a school to support some kids. And tier three is what everybody does in a school to support a few kids. So that would be kind of my response to that question.
And you've beautifully touched into and a great segue into the next section, which really leads us to thinking about like universal education, how that applies to it in regards to a multi-tiered system of support. What does that look like in relation to tiered instruction and intervention? How does that add value, that term of universal education?
So we have to have a very specific definition of universal education. And I advocate not using the term education. I advocate using the term universal instruction because that has a very specific meaning. And what it means is that it is instruction that is evidence-based to accelerate the outcome of diverse learners in Tier 1. So the best example of universal instruction is any form of strategy-based instruction. So strategic instruction model, Florida, their state professional development program has really done an excellent job in promoting strategic instruction model. Content enhancement routines are one of the strategies in that particular brand of work. Collaborative strategic reading, the work of Sharon Vaughn and others at the Vaughn Gross Center at the University of Texas. Enhanced anchored instruction in mathematics. Basically, these are general education instructional approaches that happen to have been validated to accelerate the growth of students with disabilities, students who have experienced economic hardships, English learners at the same rate as typical learning students in general ed. So it is general ed's Tier 1's way of ensuring that the lift, that more intensification of instruction in Tier 2 and Tier 3, you don't have to lift so hard. It's not like, well, this instruction works for 21 of the 26 kids in the class, and the other five will get help in Tier 2 and Tier 3. That doesn't work.
Absolutely. And I love this. I'm sorry.
Tier 3 cannot fix inappropriate or ineffective instruction in Tier 1. You can't get out of that bag with Tier 2 and Tier 3. So I advocate you have to have this definition of universal instruction. Go ahead, Ben.
No, absolutely. I was just agreeing with everything that you said. It really, you spoke to beautifully in regards to how do you strengthen the system by what would you suggest for educators and pulling in all of those instructional implications that obviously don't fall within that, you know, tier, that invisible tier of instruction. It's what all students need. So thank you for sharing that.
And something I would also encourage your listeners to consider is, and I'll just be straight up, the term intervention is pejorative. It implies that you can be fixed. Particularly with students with disabilities, these are lifelong issues that morph. They look different as you go through different developmental levels. But the disability community is not in support of the term intervention. So that's why a single concept of intensifying instruction, Tier 2 and Tier 3 intensification, has a single goal. It's not alternative education. It's to improve the student's probability of success in Tier 1. Its failure to do that and it enables students to stay at that level of intensification. So I think that that's also important. Anyway.
Absolutely. Thank you for sharing that. So I believe Anne wants to jump in with some questions.
Yeah, thank you for making those points. I know you're well aware, but I want to remind our listeners that a focus of our work at the Problem Solving Response to Intervention Project has been in supporting educators across the roles of their support for our Florida students. So it might be school-based, district, or state, but we all work for the students of Florida. And in building that integrative system to be more inclusive of all learners within and across the tiers of instruction, I want to ask you about providing some effective practices that you've experienced when proactively planning for tiered instruction for all learners.
Sure. The key word in that question to me, Anne, is planning.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that we know about how students learn and how they don't learn. If the intensification of instruction in Tier 2 and Tier 3 utilize significantly different instructional approaches than Tier 1, then expecting success in Tier 1 is not going to work. In addition, if the intensification of instruction in Tiers 2 and Tier 3, wherever those might be, does not utilize the context, scope, sequence, and pacing materials of Tier 1, then students are not going to be able to generalize what they get in that intensification environment back into into that tier one. So I think that this concept of consistent scope, sequence, and pacing, utilizing foundational materials, standards aligned instruction, is essential across all the tiers. The other thing that's essential to do that is that people are doing that, sometimes two and three people. So the lesson planning process needs to include everyone who provides instruction, whether that's academic, behavior, or social emotional. Everybody needs to be involved in that planning. I know one of the things that has happened with COVID is that teachers have been doing lesson planning on Zoom sessions or using Google Docs or what have you. And what they've found is that if that planning is done in common documents like Google Docs, then people who are not in tier one can access those pacing charts, those scope and sequence charts, in order to ensure that when the student comes to them, it doesn't feel different. It just feels more successful. And if we're using a different book or a different kind of worksheet, or we have a different scenario than the behavior actually occurs in and trying to teach the kids social skills or something. So I think this concept of everybody being on the same page, it's like when two parents are not on the same page and one parent responds to a kid one way, the other parent responds to a kid another way. Kids get confused. Mm-hmm. So that those things to me are the most important.
I absolutely agree. And I love that you brought up the importance of collaboration. And that's a positive thing, I think, that has come from COVID, is people have, like you said, started using resources or changed behaviors in the way they approach collaboration based off of the tools that they're using, based off of the response to being in a pandemic and trying to do schooling. So something else that you mentioned, you really stayed student focused on that. And I really appreciate that, because I want to know a little bit more about putting yourself in the shoes of students with specific learning disabilities. And what would be some key takeaways or considerations when we bring specially designed instruction into that collaboration?
So a couple of things quickly. Number one, we have to have common language, common understanding around what specially designed instruction is. And it has a definition. It is instruction that is evidence-based to improve outcomes of students as a result of a disability. So for example, collaborative strategic reading is evidence-based to accelerate the growth rate of students with disabilities at the same rate as non-disabled students when delivered in tier one. It doesn't have that much effect size as tier one when it's delivered in a separate environment than tier one. So specially designed instruction is specially designed because it's evidence-based for the kids with learning disabilities. What it is not instruction that has to be delivered by a special education teacher in a special education classroom. It is defined by its effectiveness for the student. Anybody who is capable of teaching utilizing those strategies can deliver specially designed instruction. So if a student with a learning disability is getting universal design instruction, let's say SIN or collaborative strategic reading in tier one, that student for all of those minutes in tier one, 90 minutes of ELA, that is specially designed instruction and should be on the IEP that reflects that. 450 minutes a week of tier one SDI because they're using collaborative strategic reading. So that I think is important. The other thing very quickly is there are three things we know that will result in the greatest outcome for kids with learning disabilities. One is a strong relationship, very strong relationship, exists between level of inclusion and growth rates. Level of inclusion in tier one. But inclusion is not a place, it's a place where inclusive instruction is delivered, like universal instruction. That's the first thing. The second thing that is important here is that the lesson planning be driven by the three principles of universal design for learning. Multiple ways of presenting material, multiple ways of enabling students to demonstrate their knowledge, and reflecting the engagement issue. So remember that all tasks, anytime that a task demand, academic behavior social function, anytime the task demand is greater than the skill that the student has to meet the demand, you're going to have a behavioral and a social emotional reaction to that. It could be anxiety, it could be depression, it could be anger, it could be fear. So academic instruction is the first protective factor that we have for behavioral and social emotional outcomes. And that's important to remember. The third thing is, so the first was inclusion, the second is lesson planning driven by UDO principles. And the third thing is that everybody providing instruction has done lesson planning together. Those three things, and the concept that all kids with disabilities are more likely to be susceptible to behavioral and social emotional barriers because of their constant dealing with the collateral effects of a disability. That's why in 2016, the US Office of Education put out a memo that made it very clear that any kid who has a disability and is having behavior or social emotional reactions, you are required by law to give that student behavior supports, whether or not they have a BIP or they are in a category that involves behavior, because having a disability puts you at risk for those other things. So I hope that answers the question. If it does, then I don't know anymore.
No, absolutely.
Absolutely does. And you've given us a lot to think about and a lot for us to work with. And you've also given our Florida educators a lot to think about. So in thinking about some forward-thinking advice, what do you envision standards-aligned tiered instruction looking like in 5, 10, or 20 years from now?
Very quickly, at the district level, I would hope we don't have silos anymore. Or the director or assistant superintendent for curriculum is in one place and the director of special ed for another, for example, is in another. Anybody who's involved with curriculum should be under that particular organizational unit. All instruction should be standards aligned. Florida has done so much for that, eliminating the special diploma and what have you, for just having those standards. We will have universal instruction. We will have lesson planning that has evidence-based protocols and procedures for doing it that everybody is involved in. And intensification of instruction will not have limits. It will be fluid and moving as necessary. We won't be talking about differentiated instruction anymore. Mm-hmm. We'll be talking about intensifying instruction as needed. The COVID, we have some new things since COVID. We teach just in time, not just in case. So if a student lacks a skill needed for the task right now, we teach it just in time. We don't wait to go and try to remediate a kid and then hope he or she remembers it for some point in the future where they might have to use it. So moving to that just in time instruction, that's what I'd like to see.
Nice.
Cool. Thank you. I love that vision. I'm right on board with it. So I'm excited. It's such a privilege to do this work. So to wrap things up, we would like to invite you to do a 90-second lightning round so that people can kind of get to know George Batch a little bit. You in game?
I'll have to think of somebody I admire and then have them think what they would say. What would Joseph Latimer say? There you go.
All right. So Pam is going to set the timer. You tell me when you're ready, Pam.
I'm ready.
All right. And so this is going to be less conversational and just much more like firing questions at you once you answer. Okay. So here we go.
Fire questions,
right? Yeah.
Quick so responses. Ready?
Let's start with tell us something that's amazing to you.
People's resiliency. COVID revolved.
Okay. Favorite childhood book.
Right. Favorite book. as a child to anything Hardy Boys? None of you have any idea.
Yes, I do. We actually have the full set. Curious, what are you reading now then?
Killing of the Flower Moon.
Good one. What's your favorite thing to do to relax?
Fly.
And dinner last night, takeout or cooked?
Always cooked. It was a grouper with mango chutney sauce.
Oh. What do you love most about your job? Being retired and consulting.
People I work with. And my job is interesting, and it's every day is different.
Okay, so finish this phrase. When I grow up, I want to...
Never grow up.
Peter Pan, that's my boy. Who comes to mind as an inspiration to you?
My wife.
One thing you may not know about George Batch?
I grew up in South America and didn't move to the United States until I was 16.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I didn't know that. So. Okay, and Pam is telling me that time is up. So we almost got through all 10. You're the first person that we have almost gotten through all. So thank you so much for being a good sport and for sharing a portion of your day with us, because we know that you join us in our quest to support our Florida educators in not only utilizing but sustaining their multi-tiered system of supports for students with fidelity in every district, every school, and every classroom. So thank you.
You guys keep doing the good work.
Thank you.
And it matters. And I'm honored you asked me to come. So thank you.
Thank you.
We are too.